marijuana, I'm sure they exist against any other issue, whether somebody's blind or whether somebody's in a wheelchair or as we found, we have nobody representing the deaf and hard of hearing people because maybe there wasn't an appropriate mechanism to get that out. So I'm glad that things are changing. I hope we can have a much kinder city and have one that's following the laws, because my personal experience is evidence that that's not the case.
Appreciate it. Hi.
Good morning. My name is Amy Anderson, and I didn't realize I was going to be speaking, but since I'm here, I want to say thank you for allowing me this opportunity to become a representative of a very hard-pressed culture, which is the mental health community. I chose to represent Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare Systems because I believe they're on the progressive side of going forward. They're currently involved with several new initiatives that I want to bring forward to the council when they become fully set in motion to help make the transition of mental health coming out of the jails and the ones who have issues on the streets, the homeless population. And we at Cascadia, now that I'm a member of their council as well, have determined that somebody's kind of dropped the ball. And Cascadia has determined that they're going to pick up the ball and they're going to run with some new progressive techniques on how to help the homeless population and the Portland police work better together. So I just wanted to bring that forward to the council. That'll be my personal project involved on this commission as well. So thank you.
Amy, thank you for serving. And as you know, I was a mental health nurse for 26 years before I won election to the county, to the council. And I didn't intervene to make sure that this position was covered. I think it's evidence of the good work of the summary commission and of the process that there is this position and that it's recognized that there are many kinds of disabilities that people struggle with. So thank you very much for serving.
Hi, my name is Mindy Stone, and I am new to Portland. I've been here actually since last November, and I am a big supporter of people with disabilities, and in particular right now what we're dealing with is a homeless issue, which is a big disability, as well as health care. I lack both of those right now. I am fortunate that I am not living on the street, but I do have friends that are living on the street, and my concern is that the city is not doing enough right now in concrete action terms to protect the people from the rain that's now settling in and the cold. I have been in solidarity with the street people in the last couple of weeks. They've been camping out on the front of City Hall steps at night and being very cordial, not disturbing anyone. But my concern is that if we are not out in the street being visible, then how does the rest of the community know that we have a problem? And the fact that the city is not doing concrete actions to house people, and we have the swine flu that's killing people. And the best way to spread a virus is to allow people in the community to get sick. So I really think that City Council needs to rush this issue. If we had snow falling like we did last winter, they would open up places. There would be places. There are vacant buildings. There are vacant lands. We should have a ban on the camping ordinance. The police in Portland need to be respectful of people who do not have a house, do not have visible means of support. We're not criminals. We're just poor. And my disability is not being able to get a job because of the economic situation around the country. There's nothing wrong with me. I can work, and I'm happy to volunteer and not even get a salary or any money if my basic needs are met. I'm not asking for anything.
So your comments relate to this agenda item how?
Because I'm disabled. I'm unemployed. I don't have access to health care. And, you know, I could easily wind up being harmed, injured with a physical disability, and I have dealt with depression in my history. So I do understand what it is like to be disabled, and I want to see the City Council do something now to help the street people.
Thank you all very much for your testimony. Commissioner Fish?
Thank you for your testimony, and just so that my colleagues are up to date, there are a number of things the council has done to address this human tragedy. One is we will be opening 3 winter warming centers. This is the second year in a row that we have funded winter warming centers. As my colleagues will recall, last winter we were able to find shelter for everybody who sought shelter during the winter emergency. We will continue to make that commitment through this winter. We are hoping for a milder winter, but we're prepared for worse. Second, we are going to make some recommendations on how to deal with camping more generally, and we have a task force that's got a series of recommendations. We'll be coming back to council with that. And third, I just want the public to know, because this is important, that in a year in which we cut budgets by, on average, 5% and made really tough choices, this council added 30% new funding to programs to house people experiencing homelessness, the disabled, and others. Of course we need to do more, and I thank you for challenging us. We can always do more, but this council is trying to do its level best, and I just want the record to reflect that.
Thank you. Any? We have a vote to make on to accept the reports. Is that correct, Commissioner Fritz?
Yes.
So do I hear a motion to accept?
Motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the reports contained in council calendar items 1417 and 1418. Carl, would you please call the vote?
Fritz? Well, congratulations. This has been a long road and a lifelong road. And here we are appointing the commission with the Portland Commission on Disabilities. There are many areas in our world today where physical, social, and economic access are issues that need to be addressed and considered in public policies and in physical environments. And this commission represents a diverse cross-section of the population that brings knowledge either firsthand because of some form of disability or through experience and interests. I have to note that I am amazed as much by the folks who didn't make it to the commission as by those who are on the commission. That when I looked through all of the applications, I thought, wow, I know this person and they're absolutely fantastic. And then when I got the list, I was like, whoa. So it was encouraging and enriching to find so many people stepping up to the plate to offer their experiences, their skills. And we certainly have a wonderful commission that we're appointing here today. Thank you for all of your work. Aye.
Fish.
Where's Nicole? Nicole's over in the corner. Nicole, I just want to thank you for the time you spent with me educating me about access and mobility issues in our community. You're a treasure, and I thank you for all the work you've done. Commissioner Fritz, I want to thank you for your leadership on this. With your customary zeal, you've jumped in and brought us to this point, and we're grateful. I just want to very briefly acknowledge 3 experiences in my life which have helped shape my understanding about the challenges faced by people with disabilities. The first was just being my father's son. My father spent 25 years working on what ultimately became the Americans with Disabilities Act, and he was a principal author along with Senator Kennedy. And the historians will note that that was actually a time when Republicans and Democrats worked together to get things done. And maybe that spirit will infect the current debate on health care. But that was his proudest accomplishment, and so as his son, I learned a great deal about these issues. The second was when I was in college, I needed to have a job to make some money, and so I drove what was then called the handicap van, which was the van that picked up disabled students and took them around. And, you know, when you don't have a mobility challenge, when you don't have a disability, you take for granted just getting around campus. And for people that had to get from class to class or to recreation or whatever, it was a huge challenge. So I learned a lot there. And third, before I was elected last year, I had the privilege of serving as a civil rights lawyer, and I represented people on ADA claims, which are enormously challenging, enormously difficult. And I learned a lot. So, you know, I, like all my colleagues, I'm learning every day about these issues. The commission, though, will help us take the good information and change policies. I was very pleased to join with Mayor Potter, who I'd like to also acknowledge. He's not here, but he was such a champion on this issue, and was pleased to join with the then Mayor Potter last December to support the creation of a commission. As Housing and Parks Commissioner, I know we have so much work to do to deal with access issues. While we have put those issues at the heart of our policymaking, we know that we're falling short. So I really look forward to getting feedback and advice and holding our feet to the fire as we go forward. Thanks to all of the commissioners who have agreed to sign up and to take the time to serve. I want to particularly acknowledge Rudy Soto, who is an intern in my office, and Nisha Saxena, who I had the privilege of working with prior to being elected. This is the beginning, I think, of something wonderful, and I'm very pleased to support Commissioner Fritz's initiative and her efforts. I vote aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for making the summary commission happen, and also to make today the Portland Commission on Disability a reality with our votes here. It's an outstanding example of her leadership and commitment to carrying through on something. And I want to thank all the new members for your willingness to serve and provide a voice to the city and in the city on issues that are of grave importance to you and to us as a community. So I look forward to working with you and pledge all my bureaus to have liaisons established. If they're not already established, we'll get them established. And we look forward to your vigilance. So thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to join with my colleagues in thanking Commissioner Amanda Fritz for her inspired leadership on this issue. I'm very grateful for it. And part of what makes her leadership so inspiring is the way she does it, and involving a diverse group of folks and putting together a set of bylaws and expectations and beginning a culture of inclusive decision-making that will serve this issue very well. So this effort has been put together the way that we aspire to be as a city government, very inclusive, very open, and a process of continuous learning. So I thank you, and I thank everyone who's been involved with this. And for those watching or listening who think that this is great, but that's for those people or other people, let me remind you that statistics are not on our or their side. This city is going to age. If you look at the demographics, we're going to become a much older city. And access, just physical access to the entire city, is going to become a greater real-life concern for tens of thousands of additional Portlanders over the next decade. So this is about all of us, and I thank you. Aye. Please read the call. What's that?
Vote on the next one.
We vote on the next one. Please call the vote on the report contained in 1418.
Fritz?
Well, I appreciate having two opportunities to make comments, because I want to thank my colleagues for theirs. Nicole Chiron and is Tekla Anderson here? Could you come forward for a second, please? So this is what the staff in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement are like. They support, and they're reluctant to come forward when a lot of the work has been done. I just wanted to publicly acknowledge, thank you very much, both of you, for all of your work on this. This is a true partnership between a lot of city staff, between elected officials, all of us, and with the community. For those who are not appointed to the commission, there we have the advocacy network. There's many, many different opportunities for people to be involved by giving input, by volunteering, many, many different ways. And if you want to know about that, go to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement website, and there'll be more information there. We're in this together, and we all need to work on it. This is not, okay, go away, do your work, and the rest of us can carry on about our business. This is a true commitment by your city government that this is an important part of our community, that we want to make it better. And so let's take that. This is the beginning. It's the end of the beginning, I think they say, right? And so now we're moving forward with a lot of good work and a lot of hard work. So this vote is to accept the recommendations for the members of the committee, of the commission. Thank you again for serving. Aye.
Fish.
Thank you for your service. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 1418 is approved. The commission is created.
Thank you.
Bravo.
You're welcome to stay to see democracy continue. We will not be offended if you have to move on to other issues and other things for your day. Carla, can you please read the title for Council Resolution, item number 1434?
Declare support for the Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors Act, DREAM Act.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I have some brief introductory remarks, but I'd like to invite forward first our invited panel, with President Vim Vivel, the president of Portland State University, Rebecca Shine, who is the producer of the documentary Papers, and Vanessa Dominguez, who is a ninth grader at Roosevelt High School and a leader in the Papers youth crew. Would the three of you please come forward? And I have some brief introductory remarks.
Welcome, President.
Good morning.
Thank you all for joining us. Mayor and colleagues, about 2 weeks ago, I attended the sold-out premiere of Papers, a documentary which was shown at the Hollywood Theater. The documentary, produced by Portland's own Graham Street Productions, highlighted the challenges faced by high school students with no legal status in our country. Today, there are over 2 million children currently living in our country with no legal status, youth who were raised and educated here and who consider America their home. And each year, 65,000 of these undocumented students graduate from high school, many with high distinction, but are unable to work, to drive, or to attend college. Many of these students, as I alluded to, are academic stars in their schools, yet face a bleak future with no options for improving their lives. For 65,000 students, this might be a story of dreams unfulfilled. However, today we have an opportunity to influence the national debate by advocating for Portland area students who are impacted by this untenable situation. The DREAM Act is a 10-year effort with bipartisan support to address this story of unfulfilled potential. The latest version of the Act, entitled Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors Act, was introduced in March of this year by Democrat Senator Dick Durbin and Republican Senator Richard Lugar. The House version of the bill is called the American Dream Act and was introduced on the same day. It is supported by, among others, both of our senators from Oregon, Senators Merkley and Wyden, and the two congressmen who have primary responsibility for Portland, Congressmen Blumenauer and Wu. I am proud to introduce several people who have played a key role in raising public awareness on this issue: President Vivel, Rebecca Shine, the producer, and Vanessa Dominguez. Rebecca, would you like to go first?
I would be delighted to. Mayor and City Council, thank you for having us. The last time I testified publicly was at the State of Oregon when the state decided to comply with Real ID Act federally and require a social security number to attain a driver's license. And that immediately affected hundreds and thousands of young people that wanted to get driver's license, wanted to get IDs, wanted to travel, wanted to participate in the society. This is a much more exciting time to testify. Let me tell you, it matters what we do locally. It has a huge impact. When we look back historically, we will see that Portland stood on the side of justice in this case. The resolution itself, I don't know if you'll be reading it, but the resolution itself says all the facts. So I don't need to repeat the facts. They're beautiful. But I want to say that, you know, for these empty seats back here, I want to be very clear that for every seat, there are so many students who would like to be here but fear for their own safety, for deportation, for arrest, for detention. There's over 60 Portland area youth who have participated on the youth crew of Papers. We can be so proud of. There are dozens of teachers. We've had teachers from 7 school districts just locally participate in Papers. They would be here, but they're educating our kids. So I just want you to know that, in a sense, the empty seats represent all those young people that need a voice and need the safety to be public, and with the DREAM Act would be able to be our leaders and be here with us. But the other part I just want to say very briefly is that this is a Portland-made film, but it has national content, national characters, and national impact. We interviewed senators and representatives from Congress, immigrants' rights leaders, people from around the country, and we have 1,400 donors from over 24 states. We've already got screenings in 7 more states. So I just hope that Portland, that you can take pride in this, and when people say, oh, I heard Papers came from Portland, that you can feel real pride that your young people and that your community helped make this happen. And I believe that the Office on Human Relations is going to host a screening specifically for yourselves and some other leaders of the community. Thank you very much.
Rebecca, can I also ask you, will there be an opportunity for the public to see the film on Oregon Public Broadcasting or on TV at some point?
We are in conversations with public television about whether they would like to air it. So that's to come. So you know, in Portland, starting October 23rd, it will air. It will be screening at the Living Room Theaters downtown for at least a week. And we've also had requests from Capitol Hill to from the House and the Senate and Congress to screen it. So it will be. You've only begun to hear about it.
Congratulations.
Thank you,
Vanessa Dominguez. Welcome.
Yeah. Good morning. Mayor Adams and City Council. My name is Vanessa Dominguez, and I'm a freshman at Roosevelt High School, and I'm one of the youth producers for the movie Papers. And I want to thank Commissioner Fish for coming to see the movie and taking personal interest in it and what's behind it. And the Dream Act will help a lot of my friends have a positive future, which right now they can't have until it's approved. And we would like you guys to come see it, because if Commissioner Fish like it, you guys would like it too.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us. President Fivel?
You now have a new role as movie critic. Huh?
After me, it may be a full-time job. But, go right ahead, sir.
Mayor and members of the council, for the record, my name is Wim Wiewel, president of Portland State University, and I'm very pleased to be here today to testify in support of the resolution 1434. Previously, I've made no secret of my support for tuition equity for the children of undocumented immigrants. The DREAM Act would provide this equity. As you know, by 2025, one in four students in the K-12 system in Oregon are expected to be Hispanic. At present, only 56% of Hispanic students ultimately complete high school. Without the promise of college, these numbers won't get much better. As you know, education is the pathway to success, and we're denying it by charging out-of-state tuition to students who may in fact have attended every single year of K-12 in America. As a state and as a nation, we have already made the initial investment in their future. Tuition equity for these students is the right thing to do. We really do have a choice to allow students to continue their education or to increase the likelihood of their dependence on social services in the future. If we choose education, we will allow them to attend our schools and help build our economy. Just so it's not abstract, the cost to attend PSU full-time at in-state tuition is about $5,700 per year. Taking the same exact course load as an out-of-state student, it costs over $17,000. As a result, the students who have to pay out-of-state tuition, who are living here, been living here for many years, who are the children of undocumented immigrants, are also unable to get federal grants or loans, and therefore college becomes virtually impossible. Now, Oregon is doing slightly better than some other places because two states don't even allow children of undocumented immigrants to enroll at all, regardless of what tuition they pay. On the other side, there are 10 states that already allow in-state tuition, but there are core challenges to those states. We are required as states to invest in K-12 education for all Oregon students, regardless of documentation status. We should require the same for higher education. That's why I also supported a state-level measure this session earlier in Salem to fix the problem. But solving it at the federal level, as the DREAM Act does, is much better because it takes care of some of these legal issues. As a university president, let me assure you, we want these students on our campus and in our classes. My next meeting, in fact, today at PSU, is to kick off our new task force on Hispanic student success. We know that even though our Hispanic enrollment has grown by over 65% at PSU in the last 5 years, we still can do better. I also want to address two objections that have been raised to the DREAM Act or a state measure. One is that it would mean a loss of income to higher education because these students would otherwise be paying out-of-state tuition. In reality, of course, that's a nonsense argument because these students simply do not come so there's no loss of income. The other argument is that these students would be pushing other students out. At PSU, we once people meet the minimum requirements, we admit you. We do not then kick people out. So we will find a way to accommodate these students. And the idea that somehow or other a measure like this would increase illegal immigration seems to me very far-fetched. The idea that a poor family would be in Awaka or Michoacan sitting around saying, you know, let's immigrate to Oregon because then 6 years from now, my child will be able to go and only pay in-state tuition is just too far-fetched to be credible. So I applaud you for taking up this resolution today. I support it very strongly. Thank you much for your time.
Thank you, President. And I'd like to just clarify, this resolution is introduced by Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fritz, and by me. The mayor has made creating opportunities for young people in both the high school and college level the centerpiece of his administration. I thank you, Mayor, for your support and leadership on this, and Amanda as well. And I'm thank the panel for coming forward. This film, and I'm not a film critic, but I will say that I watched the film, the documentary, and I was deeply moved by it. And there was one young person you featured in the film who had an Asian background, who was not only the valedictorian in his class, but was also one of the top science students in the country in a national competition, was identified as one of the great talents. This young man was faced with the prospect of being deported to a country he had never actually lived in or had an experience of, had no infrastructure, no family. We simply cannot afford to lose people like this, this kind of talent. This act doesn't reward wrongdoing. This act recognizes that these 2 million children, through no fault of their own, are here and gives them a path to citizenship, which includes a requirement that they either pursue higher education successfully or serve in our armed forces. So this is exactly what I think we should be supporting, and I thank my colleagues for co-sponsoring this resolution.
Thank you all very much for your testimony. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Do we have more invited?
Oh, that's it. Now.
Is anyone signed up?
I believe we have one person left, Melissa Sarabia.
Ms. Sarabia, welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Sarabia. I am here representing Portland State, MECHA. We are a student movement fighting for human rights. I'm here to speak for those who are silenced, for those who were not able to pursue the education that I am lucky to have. I appreciate this country very much. My parents are Mexican immigrants, and they did not have the opportunities that I have today. I love Portland. This is my home. And I cannot let you guys know how much this would affect so many people in the community, so many people that I know, so many people that are smart, are brilliant, that can contribute to this country. And they are faced with a shut door because they cannot pursue their education. I just want to emphasize that students who are accepted into any university, for example, Portland State, they don't get to pay out-of-state tuition. They pay international rates. They pay as if they were foreigners. This is just outrageous to me, because if I have the opportunity to pursue an education, I don't see why someone else who is from the same background as me, who has gone through the whole K through 12 system, cannot do the same. I think to better ourselves as a community and to compete in this global economy that we want to compete in, education is a must. And I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak today on behalf of those who are silenced. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate your testimony. All right, Carla, would you please call the vote on Council Resolution Item Number 1434.
Fritz?
My colleagues know that I'm reluctant to co-sponsor resolutions and ordinances without hearing public testimony, but when Commissioner Fish asked me if I would co-sponsor this, I didn't hesitate. I was honored to sponsor it. I think we all agree that we need immigration laws in this country which are fair, reasonable, and enforceable, and we don't have that today. I sometimes shudder to think that if I were coming into this country as I did in 1979 today, I wouldn't be here on the city council because the laws have changed. And the laws are such that if you come into the country on a student visa and you fall in love with an American citizen, you have to leave for 10 years before you're allowed to immigrate on a permanent basis. That would not have worked for me. And so I know personally how the laws don't work. I got to stay because I had trained as a nurse, and that was a profession which was greatly in demand in 1979 and in 1982 when I married my husband. But that's not the kind of country that I want the United States to be. We are a nation of immigrants. Even the Native American, the indigenous people probably came here from other parts of the world. And so we need to be welcoming. We need to be sensible, as President Vival said. It doesn't make sense to educate children, as I'm glad we do, in our great public school system, and then say once you turn 18, you're not ours anymore. Of course you're ours. We have invested in the children of our city. We continue to invest in the children of our city, and we want you to be part of our society. I'm also the commissioner in charge of the Office of Human Relations, which is and has the liaison to the Human Rights Commission. I thank the Human Rights Commission for taking a position in support and for all of the work that we are doing throughout our community. This is but one way that we are demonstrating our commitment to all people in Portland. New Portland is a lot of different kinds of people, and that makes us richer and more vibrant and a better community. Different opinions help give a better decision if we're all able to raise our voices. The DREAM Act is a long overdue bipartisan piece of legislation in Congress, which we are hoping to pass in this new administration that has so much hope for so many people. I thank Commissioner Fish for having the vision and the drive to bring this forward so quickly. I hope that this is but the start of a conversation in Portland about the importance of the DREAM Act. Because the city of Portland is going to pass this resolution. That's, as I said in the previous discussion with the Disabilities Commission, this is the beginning. This is not, okay, we're good, we move on. This is something that's really important to many people, and we need to keep working at it. Thank you very much to community members for working on it, and again, to my colleagues on the council. Aye.
Fish.
Thank you. One of the questions that I've received over the past week is, why is the Portland City Council taking up this issue? Why are we going to take time on our agenda? And I think from the testimony you've heard today, the answer is very clear. Because there are thousands of young people in Oregon that will be positively impacted by the passage of the DREAM Act. And the student from PSU who so eloquently spoke about the difference between someone who might be a friend who she may have gone to high school with, who is faced with the prospect of paying out-of-state tuition because they are not deemed to be a resident, a lawful resident of Oregon. Lord knows, at this time, particularly with our economy where it is, we don't want to have any more barriers to young people reaching their full potential. And that, at the heart of this debate, is what the DREAM Act is. Now, the sad fact is, if the DREAM Act came up for a vote today, it is questionable whether it would muster the majority it is required both in the House and the Senate to pass. And it is also questionable as to whether the entire delegation, the entire congressional delegation from Oregon, would support it. So when you ask, why are we taking this up, it is because we do have a role to lobby our congressmen and our senators to make sure that the entire delegation is on board. And in turn, we do have a role through our federal lobbying team to say this is an issue that the city cares about, and please make sure that we're putting our voice behind it. So I'm very proud to be one of the co-sponsors of this resolution. I urge people watching this to see papers. Living room theater is a great place to see a movie. I occasionally sneak out of here when, from time to time, I have snuck out of this building and seen a movie there. And it's me and two students from Lincoln making out in the back. But it's a great place to see a film. This is really a very important documentary. And it's very important not only because it's so well done, but it tells a story that too many of us didn't know enough about. And that's the essence of a great documentary, is educating, informing, and then a call to action, which follows. I want to thank my colleagues for co-sponsoring. I want to thank our panel. including Dr. Vivel, who is just doing a fabulous job at Portland State, and I would say that even if he wasn't my wife's boss. It is a great honor for me to cast a yes vote on this issue. I vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm pleased. I want to thank Commissioner Fish for bringing forward this resolution. I'm pleased to offer my add my support to hopeful congressional passage or state passage of something similar to the DREAM Act. You know, immigrants and refugees really are sort of the lifeblood of this nation and have been since this nation's inception. And it's through the eyes of immigrants and refugees that many of us who were born and raised here gain a whole new appreciation of what this country is all about. Unfortunately, what this country is all about right now is immigration policy that, to me, is not rational, nor humane, and nor compassionate. And I do hope that the DREAM Act will go a long way towards addressing some of those issues. I do believe that President Obama, once he gets health care behind him, will work on some more humane, compassionate, and rational immigration policies that will not prevent inequities such as these facing young people gaining a higher education or getting a driver's license or anything like that will be ultimately eliminated. So I'll be dreaming with you. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Nick Fish for authoring this resolution and for the opportunity to co-sponsor with him its consideration by the City Council. And I think it's very appropriate that we do so. It helps fortify Portland's definition of what it means to be an inclusive and compassionate city and to hold children accountable and exclude children who have no control over to what families, obviously, they're born into, and to exclude them from just basic human access, human rights in our country. I couldn't think of anything more passionately to stand against. I, too, want to thank President Vivel, who continues to impress me and impress the city with his willingness to stand up and have his institutions stand up and be part of making continuous progressive reform that affects the real lives of real Portlanders. It's really great and breathes new life into what Portland State is and what it can do and is doing for the city. So I thank you for that. I am enthusiastic in voting aye. Resolution is so approved. Commissioner Fish?
Mayor, I move to suspend the rules.
Unless there's objections, rules are suspended.
Would Carmen Rubio please come forward? Carmen, are you in the room? Where's Carmen? Carmen, would you please come and sit at the dais for 1 second? Mayor Adams and colleagues, today is Carmen Rubio's last day at City Hall. And Carmen was instrumental in helping bring this DREAM Act resolution before council. But for the past 5 years, she has played a leadership role on so many things in this building. First, serving Mayor Potter with distinction, and then serving as my senior policy aide. From her passion for immigrant rights to the work she's done on Census 2010, to serving as my housing liaison, to being just an incredible community resource, she has made a huge impact on our community. And whatever anger that I feel in having her poached from my team, I must say it is offset by my absolute delight that the Latino Network has chosen a wonderful new leader to take that organization forward, and I know she will be a great community partner with us in her new position. So I just wanted to give each of us the opportunity to wish her well in that new position. And I specifically wanted to tell Carmen how much I appreciated her work, that we love you for your service, and we have high hopes for you in your new position at the Latino Network. So thank you.
So, Carmen, thank you for all of your work, both with Mayor Potter and with Commissioner Fish. You were particularly helpful to me and my staff over the summer with our sharing public spaces discussions and have been an advisor to us on many different issues over many years, and I wish you well at in your next executive director job. It's actually pretty impressive that Commissioner Fish's office seems to be a training ground for, or at least a nurturing place for people to continue on to wonderful things both in his office and in the community. So thank you for all of your work.
I would also thank you for your service and wish you well in your future and look forward to working with you.
And we're going to miss you, but what great for us is you're going to continue to be a leader in an organization that we rely on very much so. So the community benefits, even if Commissioner Fish's office it takes a hit. So thank you for your service.
Thank you so much.
And I have some flowers for you.
Do you want to say anything?
I just want to say it's been my utmost honor, my highest honor, to be able to work with all of you. I've learned so much, and I have learned how dedicated you all are to serving the community, and I will take that message far and wide. And I think it's been a wonderful experience, and I want to be a partner with Council and move our agenda of equity and inclusion forward for Portland. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Council will come back into order. Carla, would you please read the title for second reading of ordinance agenda item 1435?
Mm-hmm. Assess benefited properties for street and other improvements in the Portland Mall Revitalization Project Local Improvement District.
Please call the vote.
Fritz?
We made comments last week, but I think some of them bear repeating. This has been a major project, and a lot of people put a lot of effort into it. Teresa Boyle is here, and thank you very much for your help informing our staff and also over the long history of this project. I thought the ordinance was very clear in describing the background and the issues. I'm very impressed with how Portland citizens and the workers are making sense of the new mall configuration and being careful. We need to continue to be careful. I'm being on the ground level of City Hall on Fifth Avenue. I get a firsthand view of the mall in operation, and it's gratifying to see how many people are now using the Max Green Line to PSU. We saw the empty trains going past as the drivers were practicing, and then in the first couple of days, there still seemed, when it was actually in operation, there still seemed to be very few people on the Max trains. Now they're packed, and it's very good to see. Commending Mayor Adams for his vision over many years in making sure that this was going to happen, and ask for continued diligence by the citizens of Portland to make sure that it continues to work. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I also want to say I want to thank Teresa Boyles for her good work on this and Mayor Adams, but also for the business community who are agreeing to basically tax themselves for improvements along the mall. This is something that really speaks to the commitment of many to a vibrant downtown. So I'm pleased to support this. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you again. Really appreciate your great work. Thanks as well to the business folks who agreed to tax themselves, not once, but twice. Really appreciate it, and thanks for the kind words. Aye. Can you please read the title for 1436?
Amend Portland Transportation System Plan and Comprehensive Plan to update the Gateway Master Street Plan and Chapter 11 Master Street Plans.
So I'm going to, unless there are objections, send this back to my office. I'm trying to work out a win-win, but I just wanted to let council know that if I don't get movement from the parties, we'll just be coming back with something that is not a win-win. I'm going to do my best. So unless there are objections, 1436 is referred back to my office. Can you please read Purchasing Report, Council Calendar, Item 1437?
Award a contract to K&S Madison, Inc. for biosolids transports for $585,735 per year for a five-year period.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good morning, Mayor and City Council. Christine Moody, Procurement Services. In February, 11 responses were received to the request for proposal for biosolids use. The intent of the solicitation was to ask contractors to give the city creative ideas on the transport and reuse of biosolids. Although there were other options presented, the only viable option for the city at this time was to stick with the use of biosolids for agricultural land application. The RFP selection committee was made up of city staff, a representative from the University of Washington, Clean Water Services, and a local environmental engineering firm. K&S Madison received the highest score on the proposal, and I am recommending the award of a contract in the amount of $2,928,675 for a five-year period.
So I have some questions, if I could have staff come up.
If there's some questions about the project, we do have the project manager here from BES.
So the RFP was for the continued transportation of biosolids, or the looking for a variety of options for dealing with biosolids?
Good morning, Mayor. Steve Barrett, BES. We looked at a variety of options. We opened it up to proposals of any number of different opportunities to reuse biosolids.
And how many, what kind of responses did you receive?
The variety of responses were land application on pasture land, on white winter wheat. We had opportunity for application on a poplar farm. I think there was a grass seed reuse opportunity. There was also an energy opportunity presented using the biosolids to generate energy.
And why did this rise to the top?
Well, there was a variety of criteria, including things like cost, the operational approach, the environmental benefits, and the community impacts, and the very prestigious selection committee evaluated all those opportunities and determined that there was a clear separation. The top two bidders, the best two bids, were on land application, very similar to what we do now. It affirmed kind of the approach that we've been using since 1990, but the benefit was to diversify and get a little bit closer to Portland, so we didn't use so much diesel and hauling distance, so we were going to save transportation costs. So it was the best cost for the city. It affirmed that land application was the most viable and cost-effective approach to reuse biosolids for Portland. And when we got down to the final two proposals, the committee interviewed those two companies to determine, because there was relatively little separation, and ultimately the factor was the flexibility and the cost benefit offered by K&S Madison.
So are there requirements on the so obviously a significant amount of the cost is the trucking, I
assume? Yes, that's correct.
And there's no certified MWESB participation in this contract?
I don't believe we had, well, we did have some.
Actually, K&S is using several subcontractors for the hauling services and for the application. One of them is currently applying for their WBE. So there's seven subcontractors that they're using.
Where is that?
I
didn't get that information.
No, I have it in my notes.
Okay. So there are seven subcontracts. One is going to go to WBE. Are there any requirements or expectations on the type of equipment used to haul the materials? Do they have to be low emissions? Because we do have, I realize these are big trucks, but the city is currently investing in lowering our emissions for our large vehicles. Do we have a requirement that they will be hauling our biosludge in as low emission equipment as possible?
I don't have that information. I'd have to get you that information, Mayor.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
I do know, to a little bit answer their question, the hauling contractor is the trucking company does use newer equipment, and typically they would have lower emission.
Since purchasing reports get on the council calendar directly, they don't, even though it shows up under my name, unless there's objections from the city council, I'd like to hold this over for a week to get answers to my questions, and by questions I mean expectations. So
I know we recently, the city council, or I should say the city, was awarded a large grant from EPA for using diesel technologies on our own fleet, and I actually spoke with BES afterwards about making sure that we can do that with our contractors as well. So I think that's a really good question you asked there, and we should come back to you with an answer one way or the other.
You bet.
This is a lot of hauling. These are a lot of miles. So we can make an impact, real good impact, potentially, unless they're already doing it. We should give them the kudos they deserve. All right, then 1437 is held over until next Wednesday, Carla, for further consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can you please read the title for council calendar item number? It looks like an ordinance from previous agenda 1438.
Authorize a contract and provide for payment to furnish replacement vehicles at $594,800.
Is there anyone? Oh, hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners, John Hunt, City Fleet Manager. The item before you today is for some utility vans or specialized vans that will be used throughout the city to remove signs and sign poles and do various work throughout the city. The vehicles that we're
and by vans, you mean utility trucks, right?
That's correct. They are utility type trucks that are really more of a mobile shop, because they go out and they actually provide power for tools and equipment that they use in and around the city. And the vans that we would like to buy will have a hybrid drive system that will lower the amount of fuel that they use, not only driving around the town, but they'll also use less fuel while they're parked, because they'll use the battery and hybrid drive system to provide power for the equipment. They will burn biodiesel fuel when they do need fuel. And they'll reduce over their lifetime 151 metric tons of greenhouse gases for each vehicle. So that's times four of them. So we believe that it meets the city's vision, which is to be an international model for equity and sustainability, definitely deliver efficient, effective, and accountable municipal services, enhance public safety, and it follows within our initiatives as well, and follows right along with our idle policy. The outside public sector, FedEx, they actually have 10 of these here in town. UPS has bought 200 of them. I think it's a proven technology. It's like we're on the leading edge, but not on the bleeding edge of technology. So I think we're right in the right spot to be. And the incremental costs will be about $37,000, but with some grants that we're eligible for, and with the savings and fuel cost over the life of the vehicle, we think that it'll be a net wash to the city. So we believe that we're doing the right things for the right reasons and still saving money.
What's the difference between leading edge and bleeding edge?
Well, leading edge means that we're right out there where we want to be, and we're not taking a risk where we're actually spending city's money and for something that we shouldn't be doing.
Questions from council for Mr. Hunt?
And my understanding is that you're planning to track the fuel use in these hybrids and give us a report on actually.
Yes, thank you very much for bringing that up. We actually have a computer chip that we'll put on the vehicle, and that chip provides us with computer data that's on board the van. And so we'll be able to actually look at idle times and how much fuel was used, and also overall mileage. Yes, thank you.
I guess just similar to the discussion we just had about the hauling and the diesel particulate emission. Now, I'm not familiar enough. Does biofuels eliminate the need for a diesel trap or something like that for these vehicles?
The way to look at that is if you burn fuel, you put out some greenhouse gas no matter what fuel you burn. But when the vehicle is idling, well, not idling, then we're not burning fuel, so we're not putting out greenhouse gas. So the 151 metric tons.
I mean, is it considered diesel fuel in terms of particulate content? Not so much greenhouse gas, it's particulates that diesel fuel.
It will put out less.
It will.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think
because it'll come with 2010 emissions will be on board, and because it doesn't run while it's providing the power, when it's stopped, it'll put out less particulate matter.
So what let me try to translate.
Okay.
See if this is right. That in addition to having biodiesel technology on board, it also has the best emissions control that we can procure.
Correct.
And on top of that, because it has a crane and it has plug-ins, that whereas in the old rigs, you would have to be running the engine to provide power for cranes and plug-ins, this one will not require us to run the engine.
That is correct.
That sounds good.
Thank you.
You've been training me. Thank you. All right. Does anyone wish to testify on Council Calendar Item 1438? All right. It moves to a second reading next week, and we are recessed until Thursday at 2 p.m.
I'll be back.
I got an idea for you.
Thank you.